This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You are listening to The Morning Run. It's 7:06 a.m. on Monday, the 12th of September. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Wang Xiaoning and Philip C. In half an hour, we're going to discuss the legacy of 9/11 on Middle East geopolitics. Yesterday, September 11th, marked the 21st anniversary of those events. But as always, let's recap how global markets closed on Friday.
U.S. markets closed very nicely, all up in positive territory. The Dow was up 1.2%, S&P 500 up 1.5%, and the Nasdaq up 2.1%. Asian markets also in green territory. The Nikkei was up 0.5%. Hang Seng up 2.7%. Shanghai Composite up 0.8%. Singapore's STI up 0.9%. And back home, FBM KLCI was also up 0.1%.
Interesting. Everything was green.
All green.
For a change.
For a change indeed. Well, for some thoughts on where markets are heading this week, we have on the line with us Kingsley Jones, Chief Investment Officer at Jevons Global. Kingsley, good morning. Now, as we just said, U.S. stocks rallied last week with the S&P 500 nearly up 4% for the week. What were the catalysts behind this unexpected rally?
Well, there's no obvious catalyst, but I think the market's been selling off since the Jackson Hole meeting and those remarks from Chairman Powell. So maybe this is a little bit of relief that pressure is off now. I think investors who were taking money off the table, having played the rally from June, they may have stopped selling now. And that's why you're seeing, I think, this market rally a little bit. But we still have the US midterm elections to come in November. And therefore, we think it'll be a volatile period going through October. And in our view, it's pretty hard to call a new bull market yet, as the leadership in stocks is mixed. You know, energy and renewables ought to remain strong, and we would expect that they will figure prominently in the coming bull market. But the largest sector remains tech, and the picture there is still a bit murky. We've got margin erosion in technology due to higher wages, which is a follow-on from, you know, cost pressures generally in the community, and interest rates look set to go higher. So I think we're going to muddle through until the new year, but definitely keep an eye out for signs of an emerging bull market and which sectors may play in that.
Okay, what are the signs then, Kingsley? What should we be on the lookout for if the bull market were to, you know, emerge?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great, great question. So I think there's already a pretty clear sign in the Australian market that the energy transition, particularly in connection with electric vehicles, that's really a powerful trend that has remained resilient right through this period. So, you know, I think, investors may be skeptical about buying Tesla at these levels, but we think perhaps this could be a good opportunity in this coming period of volatility to put that in the portfolio. The other area that's closer to home in Australia is we've been buying the lithium stocks simply because, you know, against all expectations, companies like Pilbara Minerals, which had been unprofitable for a long period of time, was suddenly making some very good profits with good forward demand in their lithium mining and processing business. So I definitely think we've got a bull market in critical minerals for electric vehicles. And we just have to look wider to see where else this trend emerges in the stock market.
But Kingsley, are you worried about the US dollar strength? Because if I'm looking at Bloomberg, the Bloomberg Dollar Spot Index, it's still up close to, almost 11% on a year-to-date basis?
Yeah, well, you've identified there, I think, one of the major risks for non-US holdings is that US dollar strength is typical of a monetary tightening period, like we've been living through with rising interest rates. And the previous remarks on air concerning Janet Yellen's viewpoint on Russia oil price caps and other matters, I think that's just going to tighten the oil market a lot. Price caps can be effective, but one of the things they're most effective at is reducing supply. So I think that that dollar tightening or dollar strengthening and also a pretty difficult winter for energy is the main overhang for this market.
But, you know, just focusing on China, you know, is it the issue about a weaker yuan versus a stronger dollar there? Are the fundamentals of the weak yuan a result of strong dollar or the fundamentals of the Chinese economy being weak?
I think that's a really great puzzle to try to figure that one out. I think it's probably more China than the US, but it's hard to say, and it's a great question because this is a period where that yen weakening is quite unexpected in the sense that normally yen's a bit defensive, but on this occasion, it's clearly not. And so it's a great thing to explore in looking perhaps at the trade balances between Japan, China, and Japan and the rest of the world, ex-China. And one thing I'd point to is that we've been active in shipping stocks, which, of course, is a little bit ugly right now because they've been trading down. But Japanese shipping stocks have been unusual in holding up very well. So I think the solution to that puzzle might lie in looking at the trade data more closely and trying to see if there's a new pattern emerging, which is a really Japan-China axis of trade.
And sticking to China, but also bringing in the point about EVs that you made earlier, Bloomberg reported that the world's largest EV battery supplier was operating in a closed loop in Chengdu. How are the lockdowns in China affecting the supply chain for EVs, particularly batteries?
Well, obviously, the lockdowns are really going to pressure those supply chains. But, you know, the fact that they're able to operate in a closed loop in Chengdu indicates that you know, China may take draconian measures, which is obviously inflexible. But on the other side, the flip side, the working practices are a little bit flexible and people are accommodating to that. So what I mean by that is that they seem to be getting through at least maintaining some production in spite of what are very clear, you know, impediments to that. So I think that the supply chain impact long term may be less than we imagine. But we'll need to watch it closely, particularly for shipping, because there may be an opportunity to buy shipping stocks in recovery once we see those lockdowns lifted.
Meanwhile, Janet Yellen said on television last evening that she remains hopeful that the US can actually avoid a recession and there'll be a bit of a soft landing. But that depends really on the ability of the Fed to juggle many, many things. Are you in her camp?
I'm in her camp in favouring optimism over pessimism, but I do think it's a difficult matter that they face with the Fed, particularly now that there's also this other factor emerging with, you know, the energy war in Europe between Russia and the EU, and also how that affects the trade patterns for energy generally around the world and how that might lead to scarcity. So I think it's a real challenge. But, you know, the job of a central banker is essentially to keep everyone calm whilst they do what is necessary to try to rein in inflation. So I think that's the right attitude. Whether it plays out that way, we'll just have to see.
And I have a question on China, though, and the Chinese economy in general. Some people are questioning the economic data coming out, whether it really will shows a picture of how the actual Chinese economy is facing it, how slow things are in China. And we've got news coming out that there's just another series of lockdowns in one of the universities. Do you get a sense that actually the Chinese economy is much weaker than it really is?
I think that puzzle as to what is the real situation in China, that's existed for as long as I've been in financial markets, which is a little over 25 years. So I don't think there's anything particularly new there in puzzling over which data to believe or whether you believe anything that comes out of Chinese data services. But the other factor that I point to is commodity markets are generally a fairly good guide in the sense that, you know, nobody really buys iron ore unless they want it. And what we've seen is iron ore has traded down below $100 US per ton and is now trading back up around those levels or even through them. So I think that indicates that no matter how weak we might believe the Chinese economy is, there's definitely signs of life. So I wouldn't dismiss it yet. I think that we'll probably have to wait till the new year, and particularly this coming meeting that everyone anticipates where, you know, Xi will get a third term on October 16th. There may be a bit of change in policy after that. We may see improved conditions generally. But look, it's hard to tell. I would watch commodity prices as the main way to understand what's going on in China.
Kingsley, thanks as always for the chat. That was Kingsley Jones, Chief Investment Officer at Jevons Global, giving us his take on some of the trends that he sees moving markets in the days and weeks ahead, capping the conversation there with just some reflections on what's happening with the China economy.
I think it's very interesting because, you know, we're always scratching our head, what are the fundamentals of the Chinese economy? Mm. And I think Kingsley is also like, it's a big puzzle to solve. But he points to macro indicators like commodity prices, like iron ore. It's a very good bellwether on how robust the Chinese economy is.
Economists also look at things like electricity consumption in major cities, right, as a gauge, secondary indicators of how the economy is doing. I think the other one that people look at is the amount of cargo that's actually transported across China, be it on roads or on railways, as an indicator of how the economy is doing. But if I look at commodity prices across the board, except for iron ore and nickel, which are up on year-to-date basis, everything else is in negative territory. Aluminium is actually down close to 19%. 10%, same as copper, same as silver. Even when we look at the agriculture space, for example, palm oil not doing so well. But still, the one commodity that's done really well, still crude palm, oil, which is still in positive territory.
Which is very interesting for me because you think about it, right? Electricity, trade, they all reflect some section of the economy, but not the holistic view, though.
Indeed. And I was just thinking about how not too long ago we were talking about a commodity super cycle because all the commodities were booming, but we definitely see a more mixed picture now. Interesting stuff as always. 7:16 in the morning, we are heading into some messages. And when we come back, we're going to discuss what should be the process for LEAP market listed companies to transition to the ACE market. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.